ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna. This morning I started speaking on the 24 gurus described by the Avadhut, the exceptional non-regulation following sadhu who was instructing Prahlad Maharaj, as described in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this morning I spoke on the earth. And I was just about to speak on water, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then when water made a spectacular entry in the form of a cloud burst, and we came from a picturesque viewing angle on the roof down here inside. So that's why we're late. We had to resettle. So the Avadhut taught some of the things that we can learn from the solidity of the earth. We should be solid in our commitment to Krishna consciousness. Solid, steady, tolerant of all disturbances. Water, obviously, has the quality of liquidity, which is a very different quality. And water in different phases, we can learn different things. From the rapidly flowing stream, the kind of rapidly flowing stream that suddenly comes into existence during the rainy season, which we're now experiencing here. Rainy season is still going on here. Then due to sudden showers, then streams come into existence. So flowing very swiftly, clear water, clear and fresh. So then the nature of the mind of a purified person, clear and fresh. And also the Avadhut gives the example that when a saintly person speaks, his words sound as clear and as fresh and as pure as a flowing stream. Another example we have of a flowing stream, of course, not exactly a stream, but a mighty river, is that of the Ganga, the most famous river maybe in the world. Ganga, Ganges. Now, anywhere we go in the Ganga, we'll find, and that means from her source on this plane, at Gomukh. And Gomukh, then she comes to Gangotri, and through coming down through Badrinath, Rishikesh, Haridwar, then all through the plains of India, takes a right-handed turn in Bengal to go through Navadvip and come to Ganga Sagar and reaches the sea, and then goes down to the lower planetary systems to be known as the Bhogavati River. But wherever we encounter the Ganga, she's always flowing very fast. Kunti Devi gives an example in this regard. She prays to Krishna, Tvayi me nanya vishayam yathir madhupate sakritvatim udvadadha adho ganga bhaugamadanvati. She used the word Ganga. She says, may my devotion to you flow just like the Ganga. So we may be at the source of the Ganga. We have a long way to go. Some people do Ganga Parikrama. Have you heard of that? You know about Govardhan Parikrama. You walk around Govardhan, 14 kilometers. It's quite a job, isn't it? Takes quite some time. Usually devotees feel very tired up after that. How about doing Ganga Parikrama? You walk all around the Ganga. That means you go up one bank, turn around. You could. I'm not sure whether you start at the Ganga Sagar or at Gomukh, but either way, you go all the way up one bank and then you turn around and go back all the way. You can do parikrama of Ganga. So she says that, may my devotion to... Yeah, it's a long way. If you're at the source of the Ganga at Gomukh, and we have to go all the way to Ganga Sagar, it's a long way to go. But the Ganga is nevertheless enthusiastically rushing. She's always very fast current, very dangerous to bathe in the Ganga. One of our devotees, I remember, that was 1977, must have been August 1977. I was in Delhi, and some anecdote I'm just telling. I was in Delhi in our ISKCON center there, and the Nam Hata party, that was Guru Kripa Maharaj's party, who were collecting in Japan for building, especially the ISKCON temple in Vrindavan. So they went up to Haridwar, and they came back with one member less a few days later, because Rasagya was his name. He drowned in the Ganga. Strong young man, but the Ganga's current was stronger than him. It's a very powerful current. She's very powerfully going. So in the same way, even though we may see, we have a long way to go to reach to the lotus feet of Krishna, but still enthusiastically rushing, going for, let us go, let us not stop, let us not think, oh, I have such a long way to go, I can dawdle here and there, I can stop here and there, I can go, I can stop and take a Limca or a Coca-Cola. Just goes on very enthusiastically all the way. Actually, this is not in the Bhagavatam description. I'm just adding this in because from earth, water, from any of these, we can derive so many examples. I'm just adding one of my own, you could say, but it's based on Kunti Devi's prayer. So she says, may my devotion to you, Krishna, flow like the current of the Ganga flows toward the sea. So when we think of water, when we see rapidly flowing water, we can think of how water is always trying to reach the sea. The rivers are described to be the wives of the ocean. So the wife is always wanting to be united with her husband. So even if we're far inland, the water is always trying to find a way to the sea. And it may, the water in a small stream may join to another bigger stream and then another bigger stream which flows to the ocean. So water, wherever the water may be, the water is trying to reach the stream. So in the same way, we have to try to reach Krishna. Regarding the ocean, that's another huge body of water. Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita mentions the rivers and the ocean. What's that verse? Anyone? Very good. Someone knew it. Apuryamanam machala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kama yang pravishanti sarve so shantim apnoti na kama kami. Lord Krishna gives the example that the ocean is always full. The ocean is such a vast body of water that even huge rivers like the Ganga enter the sea. When we say the Ganga, we mean not just the Ganga, but the Yamuna is another huge river that enters into the Ganga. And there are many other rivers, the Son and the Gandaki, so many rivers, they enter into the Ganga. And all that water enters the ocean isn't disturbed. There's other famous rivers in the world, are Amazon, Nile, and here in India there are other big rivers, Ganga cha, Yamuna cha, Godavari, Saraswati, Narmada, Sindhu, Kaveri, famous rivers, big rivers. Also Krishna River is not mentioned there. So many others, they're mentioned in the fifth canto. Here in, just over the hills in Tamil Nadu, there's, yeah, Kaveri is there. And Vaigai, what's the Sanskrit name? Vaigai in Madurai, almost non-existent now, dried up. The Sanskrit name is there. There's so many famous rivers. Tungabhadra is there, starting in Karnataka, then goes to Andhra, big rivers. So they all flow into the sea, but the sea is so full in himself that the sea doesn't become agitated by the big rivers. So the example is given that even though so many material desires may enter the mind of a transcendentalist, but he remains calm and peaceful. This is the example. Apuryama nama chala prachishta. The sea remains achala, fixed in his own position. So living in this material world means that the senses will always interact with the sense objects. We see, we touch, we taste, we smell, we feel. And the inclination may be there, let me enjoy that. But someone who is as deep as the ocean, he won't be disturbed by the interaction of the senses with the sense objects and the possibility of enjoying them. So that's an example about the ocean. Similarly, a deep lake has a very, it's water also, but has a very different nature to that of the ocean, very different to that of the running stream. It's very still and calm and clear, and so many living beings, they resort to that water for sustenance. There's a beautiful description in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam of the Bindu Sarova, on the banks of which Kardama Muni was performing his meditation, a very beautiful place, sattvic place in the mode of goodness. So in this way, the heart of a devotee should be clear and calm and deep, like a beautiful lake. Of course, sometimes it's seen that in a calm lake, sometimes a bubble comes up from the bottom. This is an example sometimes given that deep within the heart there may be some desire which may suddenly arise like a bubble arises in the lake. So it may suddenly arise, unknown why it's there, how it got there. But then someone who's actually spiritually advanced, that some desire may arise from deep in the consciousness. It may be some desire that had been sitting dormant in the consciousness for many, many lifetimes, suddenly arises. But he just lets it come, pop, gone. Don't act on it. Of course, water is important for cleansing. So in the same way, by coming in contact with a devotee should be so clean in heart that others, by coming in contact with him, they become purified, they feel purified. Just like after you take a bath, you go in the Ganga. Ganga is also cold, right? Even in the hot summer, you can enter the Ganga, very cold. She's called Himavati, is one name of Ganga, means full of ice. She comes from the icy hills, Himavati. So even when she gets far away, she's come far away. Even in Bengal, she's very cold. The water is very cold, but that's very refreshing. So in the same way, in the presence of a devotee, we become purified. We feel purified. That Narottam Das, who was born on the bank of the Ganga, not exactly, on the bank of the Padma. You could say it's the same river. Same in some ways, not in other ways. But he says, Gangara parashohele paschate pavan darshane pavitra karo eto margun. About the Vaishnava. He's a pure Vaishnava. He says that the Ganga purifies after taking bath many times. Of course, one is immediately purified if one has to offer arati. By taking bath in the Ganga, one becomes completely purified and suitable for that. But to purify the consciousness may take some time. Whereas, Narottam says, by contact with the Vaishnava, one is immediately purified. Why is that? Because Tomara Hridaye Shada Govinda Bishram Govinda Kahena Vaishnav Mora Paran. Because the Vaishnav is in his heart, Krishna is always there. Krishna himself says that the Vaishnava, my devotee, is my very life. So earth has the quality of solidity, which a sober person can learn the quality of solidity, from the solidity, being very solid in one's Krishna consciousness. From the water we can learn liquidity of Krishna consciousness. And from the air has very different qualities also. Yata, what is that verse? Yata kasho stito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tata sarvani bhutani madstani putubhudharaya. Krishna gives the example. Krishna gives many examples in Bhagavad Gita, doesn't he? So many examples, one after another. Must be dozens of them. So just as the wind is always situated in the sky, but at the same time doesn't mix with anything. So in the same way, Krishna himself is there present but doesn't mix with anything. A similar example is shariram yadabhapnoti matstam. No, what is that? The gandha. What is it? How does that verse begin? No, that comes before that. Shotram chakshu sparshanam cha. What is that? Shriram yadavapnoti yad gupit krama ishvara grihit vaitani sangvad vayo gandha nivashayat. Yeah, so another example is given how the consciousness is transferred from one body to another. It's very subtle. That just like the aroma is transferred from one place to another. You don't see it, but it's transferred from one place to another by the air. So in the same way, the consciousness of a living being is transferred from one body to another. So the air moves here and there, and sometimes we say, the air smells very sweet. Or we may say, very bad smell. But the air is the air. The air is not, doesn't partake in the good smell or the bad smell. The air is transcendent to all of that. Just different elements may interact with the air. And in that way, it appears that the air has now got a bad smell or a good smell. It becomes the vehicle for that, but actually it's aloof from that. So the air is an example of something which remains aloof, although apparently mixed with other things. So in the other way, we may say, this devotee is an American devotee or a Chinese devotee or a black-skinned devotee or a tall devotee, but these are all It's got actually got nothing to do with the nature of the devotee. What is his nature? He's a devotee, devotee of Krishna. And these material designations have nothing to do with him. They're just temporary. That's true of everyone, that whatever material designation we have, it's just some temporary phase that we're going through. The great difference is that the Vaishnava knows that. He doesn't act as if, or think as if, I'm an Indian, I'm a Hindu, or I'm a Russian, or any such thing. He knows that these qualities may be connected with me, but it's just temporary, just like the air is temporarily in one situation, although the air is vast, but temporarily in one situation the air may appear to have a bad smell, and in another situation may appear to have a good smell. But really the air has got nothing to do with any of that. So a devotee may come into contact with various situations, but he always remains aloof. It means he may have to act in according to the situation. Just like if the rain is pouring down, if one has to go out, it makes sense to use an umbrella. But that doesn't mean that the Vaishnava, he doesn't identify with the body, but he knows that my body has to be engaged in the service of Krishna. While I have this body is the medium for my service to Krishna. So as long as I'm in this temporary body, I have to maintain the body so the body may serve Krishna. But he doesn't identify with it. So that's the difference between a transcendentalist and a materialist. A materialist identifies with the situation he's in. A transcendentalist is not totally aloof from the situation that he's in, but mentally he remains aloof. He knows that ultimately I have nothing to do with any of this earth, water, fire comes. I'm doing a little bit different order than comes in the Bhagavatam. So fire, what can we learn from fire? In modern society we don't see fire so much as we see in more natural or more traditional societies. Of course, in India, it's seen regularly for cooking, but it's gas from a canister that's used for cooking. Otherwise, fire is the most important element in Vedic civilization. In every home, there should be one akhanda deep, a fire that keeps on burning, or a lamp that keeps on burning and is never put out. Because fire is required for light, for cooking, and for performing yajna. So there should be one fire that goes on burning in the home. That means in the morning, when you wake up, you use that to light, first of all, lamps, and then for cooking. So in this way, fire is essential. But at the same time, it can be very dangerous. So we have to be very careful. So we are warned, Chanakya warns us to be very careful when we approach powerful people such as the king or even a cow. Cow has horns. When we approach a brahmana, we generally expect him to be very kind, but if we misbehave, he can curse us also. The king also can favor us. Here, you take one kingdom, or can condemn us to death on the spot. So we should be very careful with fire, when dealing with fire. fire can burn up out of control. Well, that's that kind of fire. A devotee should not be like that. The fire that suddenly blazes up. That example is given in the Gita, again by Krishna, that karma, duṣpurena nalena cha. I mean, Krishna compares lust to fire, which burns very dangerously, can burn up within the heart, burn up our whole Krishna consciousness. So be very careful. From fire we can learn to be very careful. Fire consumes everything that goes into it. It either consumes or it purifies. So in the same way, a saintly person, one who's on a very high platform, he doesn't become contaminated by things which would contaminate other people because of his powerful, burning Krishna consciousness. Things that would contaminate others, bad association, bad food, that means food cooked by materialistic people, he doesn't become contaminated. Of course, we should be very careful in the neophyte stage and not imitate this. Fire also purifies. Gold becomes purified by placing in fire. So if we keep ourselves in the fire of Krishna consciousness, Cheto, Darpana, Marjana, the seven-tongued fire of Sankirtan, if we remain in that fire, then we'll be purified. So that we want to come out of the fire, the blazing fire of material existence. Hari Hari Bifale Janama Goainu Manusha Janama Paya Radha Krishna Nabhajiya Janiya Shunya Bishakainu. So we're in the blaze, what is that? Shangshara Bishanale. That's what it is. Shangshara Bishanale Diba Nishihi Ajale. Narottam Das says that the poison fire of material existence, we're burning in it day and night. So we want to come out of that fire and throw ourselves in the fire of Sankirtan, of Krishna consciousness, and become purified by that fire. It's hot. So we have to take the heat, tolerate the heat, so that we can become purified. Now, another factor of fire is that sometimes it's manifest and sometimes not. The possibility of fire is there in wood, but it doesn't become manifested until it's placed in fire. So in the same way, a saintly person may sometimes be concealed and sometimes be revealed. We may take, it may be that someone's a very saintly devotee or very realized, but we don't recognize. But then sometimes may manifest. So we may see someone just appear to be some ordinary devotee and okay, nice devotee. But then their qualities may manifest at some point in time. A great example of that is our own most worshipable Srila Prabhupada, who, as far as his godbrothers were concerned, was good devotee, above average, as far as grihasthas go. But from the point of view of the sannyasis and brahmacharis, they would refer to the grihasthas as pocha grihastha, which means rotten. Pocha is a Bengali word, which means rotten. So rotten grihastha. But Srila Prabhupada came out and unimaginably did far more for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement in terms of preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world than all of them put together could even imagine doing. So sometimes a Vaishnava is concealed and sometimes revealed. Those who accept disciples, they're expected to burn up the sinful reactions of the disciples. Means that he engages them in purificatory activities. Fire burns differently according to the fuel. Depending on the kind of wood, the quantity of wood, whether it's wet or dry wood, or maybe some other fuel altogether, like plastic, burning paper, burning bodies. Of course, when a body is burned, it's burned on wood, usually. Nowadays, there are electric incinerators for dead bodies. Sometimes even live bodies are burned. That's a horrible form of execution. Not in the Vedic culture. So the fire manifests differently. And there are other factors also. How the if the wind is blowing, the fire may it may blaze up more, or it may go out if there's too much wind altogether. So there's so many factors. So fire is very unpredictable, manifests in different ways, but basically it's the same element. So in the same way, depending on the vehicle of the fire or from what it manifests, so in the same way, we see there are many different living beings. There are Jalaja Navalakshane, there are living beings in the water, there are living beings who remain sthavara, they remain unmoving on the land. There are reptiles and insects and snakes and birds and humans. They're all different living beings with all different natures. Even among humans, persons of very different natures. Even among dogs, some dogs are very aggressive, some are very docile. All different natures, but all basically of the same stuff. So they're just manifested differently according to the mode, the particular matrix of the modes of material nature that that living being has acquired in course of time. So there are so many examples given. Just like the fire is always flickering and changing, so in course of time, we're also our position is changing. These are some of the examples we can see from fire, and we can actually think like that. This meditation on the different elements, and then there'll be others also. They invite us to apply our intelligence to see the actual understanding of reality in everything we see. We can learn from everything. We can see in the flickering of the fire, we can understand the changing nature of material existence. It's always changing a little bit this way and that way. So in this way, we are invited to apply our intelligence to everything we see, everything we come in contact with, to understand the nature of this material world, the nature of the living being within the material world, how we don't belong to this material world at all. So these are lessons that we have to learn as being taught by the Avadhut to Prahlad Maharaj. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there now. Now we have a bigger group here. Oh, actually, the air and the sky, I mixed the explanations. But even in the original, they are mixed also, that the sky is everywhere, the air is everywhere, but they don't mix. They retain their own nature. So we can say earth, water, fire, air, and sky have been covered. And tomorrow, Krishna willing, we can go on to some other examples. Any question here? No. All right then. So your traveling Sankirtan party can move like the wind here and there. Distribute books wherever you go. Chant Hare Krishna. Inspire people in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna! All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.